Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Kate Stetson. I represent Dominion Transmission. When the Commission alters a negotiated settlement, it must satisfy the Mobile Sierra standard, the public interest standard. When the Commission modifies a filed tariff, it has to meet Section 5's just and reasonable standard, both prongs of it, by substantial evidence. The Commission in this case altered a settlement and modified a tariff and met neither Mobile Sierra nor Section 5's standards.
Could we go back a minute just to understand a little bit more about the fuel retention calculation? What do you understand to be the Commission's theory in ordering these additional reports? I don't mean it sort of Mobile Sierra, Section 5,
right,
Section
right.
10, whatever. I mean, what is it? What is it?
Are they after?
Yeah.
What the Commission's, my understanding, I can only take from what the Commission has said it's after. And what the Commission said in its rehearing order is that the additional information would be useful because the Commission has a policy against subsidization. It favors transparency of information, and more information is better than less. Therefore, 16 items of information is going to be unjust, and 19 is going to be just.
It's a given that there are people enjoying negotiated rates, right? Customers.
There are a few customers, I think, on Dominion's system that are enjoying negotiated rates. I don't think there are actually any who are enjoying negotiated fuel percentages. But even if they are waivers for transactions. That's right. Whenever a shipper enters into a transaction that doesn't consume any fuel, they get a waiver.
At least one thing that came to my mind as a possibility is that by getting this information, the Commission could see, if it were the case, that the data that Dominion had submitted earlier, that I assume led to the negotiated rate, was inaccurate. Because it overstated costs or understated revenues.
Right, but the starting point for that inquiry, I think, has to be the settlement itself. And one of the understandings in the settlement that was set forth in 01 and then reiterated in 05 is that the parties were going to each bear particular risks associated with where they were pegging the rate, where they were pegging the fuel retention percentage.
Well,
so the possibility.
Right. At least one theory of what the Commission is doing is that the data that led it to approve the original negotiated rate were inaccurate, and that once it found the truth of the matter, it would then have the power either under Mobile Sierra or under Section 5, let's put that aside, which it's to be, to change the rates.
Well, the problem, I think, Judge Williams, is that for the commission to modify the tariff in this case, which is what it ordered done, it needed to show by substantial evidence that there was an issue. It was not enough for the Commission simply to speculate there could be subsidization occurring. That is precisely what happened in the C. Robin case some time ago, and I'd commend that case to you. That was a situation where the Commission tinkered with a tariff because it looked at the rates that had been set forth for various shippers, and it decided that there was at least a risk that one shipper was being subsidized by the others. There was no evidence that that was actually occurring. There was just a risk. And the Commission said, we have a policy against subsidization, therefore we're going to tinker with this to ensure that no subsidization is occurring.
Robin, what did it tinker with?
Yeah.
It tinkered with the rate that was being paid by the shipper.
Isn't that a little different from tinkering with the data? I understand that the data submission requirements are embedded in the tariff, in the, or in the negotiated contract, but they're still conceptually different from the rate.
Oh, but I think the fact that they're embedded in the tariff requires the commission to be put to the same proof that it's always put to whenever it modifies a tariff. And understand, the commission is not hamstrung from getting the information that it needs to do its job. To begin with, the commission has, and Keyspan has, these 16 data points, which is more information, to my knowledge, that any other pipeline supplies to the commission and to its shippers on a regular basis. The commission can do audits. The commission can, as it is doing in a separate rulemaking, ask the industry for additional information. There's a pending notice of proposed rulemaking that addresses, among other things, just these issues, issues relating to fuel retention and waiver and how to disclose those data. So the fact that this is in the tariff is the problem, Judge Williams. There is no conceptual difference that this court has ever seized on to calibrate the substantial evidence standard when you're talking about a rate, when you're talking about a term of service, when you're talking about another term in the tariff. That's what the natural case said. If you're talking about modifying a tariff, any term in that tariff is going to be subject to that same inquiry. Is there substantial evidence?
I mean, I guess you could regard disclosure obligations in a tariff as a sort of surplus to the basic tariff requirements, which most people think of as rates and conditions of service. That intuitively suggests that maybe just the ordinary Section 10 standard, which the Commission rather lamely invoked on rehearing, should be the applicable one.
Well, I think the Commission itself, despite having, as you said, it mentioned Section 10 in the rehearing order, the Commission knew what it was doing was under Section 5. It said so again and again in its first order and in its second. And
well,
that's the reason.
It said it a lot, but it also said Section 10.
It did say Section 10 once. But the reason that the Commission well understood that what it was doing was modifying a tariff, the best place to see that, I think, is with respect to its reversal on the retroactivity part of its original order. The original order from the Commission said, Dominion, please refile your 2004 and 2005 fuel information reports. And Dominion came back and, among other things, said, first, you can't alter the settlement, you can't modify the tariff, and you can't make us do this retroactively under Section 5. Section 5 remedies are prospective only. And the Commission said in its rehearing order, you're right. They are acting under Section 5 to modify the tariff. There are ways for the Commission to obtain information. This is not the way. Taking a shortcut right through a tariff and ordering, pursuant to its Section 5 authority, a modification of the tariff to obtain that data, they can do that. But they need to hit those marks. They need to establish by substantial evidence that what's already in the tariff is unjust, and what they are proposing to supplant it with is just. And the Commission, as I think it must recognize, has a bit of a conceptual problem with that first prong.
You mentioned the retroactivity point. Is there anything about Section 10 that limits it to orders to prospective effect only?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor. Section 10 is most often invoked by the Commission in rulemakings, such as this pending one that's going on parallel to this proceeding. And to my knowledge, there is no bar against retroactivity. Because this case didn't come up under Section 10, I don't think the issue was explored. But with respect to the tariff and to the substantial evidence, all that we have on the Commission's part is this contention that subsidization is a bad thing and transparency is a good thing, and therefore the 16 items that are in the tariff right now must be unjust. But remember that the Commission began this whole process by approving the settlement, not just once, but twice. And when it approved that uncontested settlement two times, it had to find that the settlement was fair and reasonable and in the public interest. The settlement was last approved in May of 2005. And then in December, the Commission issued its order saying that this particular tariff provision was unjust. As this Court said just a couple weeks ago in the latest of its Burlington decisions, it's hard, in a slightly different context, it's hard to understand how a settlement could be fair and reasonable and unlawful and unenforceable all at the same time. Now, this is a different situation a little bit because we're talking about 7 months in the interim. But for the commission to overturn that tariff provision, the 16 discrete items that were negotiated and included as an integrated part of the settlement, the commission was starting from the position of having approved those items, that tariff provision, and the rest of the settlement as fair and reasonable. So for it to turn around and conclude that those 16 items of information were unjust because they did not include an additional three, the commission needed to establish by substantial evidence that there was an issue, rather than just citing platitudes about commission policy, rather than just citing the benefits of transparency. Because as we understand from many prior cases, there is a range of reasonableness. There can be more than one just and reasonable term in a tariff. This tariff contains 16 pieces of information. They are the pieces of information that the settling parties, including Keyspan, thought were important to include in 2001. They were discussed again before the settlement was signed in 2005, at which point Keyspan had already identified its concerns to the commission with respect to these fuel waivers and negotiated fuel retention percentages. That was the time for Keyspan, in the course of those settlement negotiations in early 05, to say, can you add these three things to the list of 16? It didn't do so.
If the commission, well, the commission, I think, obliquely, seek to have the order sustained under Section 10 at this point. That's, at least one can read it as asking that in the alternative. If one were to look at it under Section 10, is there anything under any foundational requirement for a Section 10 order that is left out?
It's a, as you recognize, I think it's a hard question to answer
question
in the
question of the tariff integration.
Right. Putting that aside, and putting aside the fact that the commission didn't act under Section 10, it acted unlawfully under Section 5. If the question were, could the commission, in a separate order under Section 10, without acknowledging that settlement agreement, without acknowledging this is part of the tariff, order this information? I think there are certain parameters to a Section 10 order. Section 10 involves the commission's authority to require reports in furtherance of its regulation of the industry. And as I mentioned to Judge Williams earlier, usually that Section 10 action takes place in an industry-wide context for just that reason.
Say, that's not what Section 10 says. The language is much broader.
The language is broad, yes, but when the commission has used Section 10, it's used it industry-wide, and it makes sense why.
If it were any court upheld this interpretation of Section 10?
No, because Section 10 in this particular guise I don't think has ever come before any court. The only case that we could find addressing something other than an industry-wide application of Section 10 through a rulemaking, and then the rulemaking comes up for review, is in a situation where you have a brand new LNG facility that pegs its rates in a certain place. The commission is not permitted to order that facility to file a Section 4 case within a period of years. It can't do that. So what it did in the Trunkline case, which is the only Section 10 case that FERC cites in its brief, the commission required the filing of reports under Section 10. But there's a very practical reason why the commission doesn't regularly require from individual pipes, all 74 major pipes, random filings relating to information that shippers on the pipes might like to get. It would be absolutely overwhelmed with those requests. Section 10 is used to set
how the commission exercises its authority. I mean, we can't presume it would act.
That's quite true, Judge Rogers. But the fact that the commission has never done this, has never taken this kind of action,
I mean,
strongly
argument is made that if you wanted to overcome Section 10, then the settlement agreement should have made it clear that these are the 16 items that will be provided and nothing more, notwithstanding Section 10. and that's not in the agreement itself. And the question I have is sort of, why would Congress write a statute that would tie an agency's hands from getting information that it determines it needs to administer the statute?
Oh, the Commission, let me be very clear about this. The Commission is not hamstrung from getting this information.
No,
it has resources.
You limit the methods by which it may, and the statute is one of these all-encompassing. If the Commission needs information to carry out its functions under the statute, it has the authority to request it.
Yes, but Mobile Sierra and that doctrine does exactly the same thing. It's a very unusual doctrine, I'll grant you. But when two parties negotiate a settlement that FERC is asked to approve, and they negotiate a rate, what the Mobile and Sierra cases hold is that the Commission is constrained in those circumstances from exercising its authority to the usual degree that the statute permits it to exercise. Under the Mobile and Sierra cases, the Commission, once it approves that negotiated rate, the Commission's authority is shrunk back to that public interest standard. So it is not anomalous to argue that the Commission is equally constrained pursuant to its Section 10 authority. And the other problem, aside from the settlement, which I think does ground even the inquiry into the tariff modification, is that this is in a tariff. The way that the Commission went about this modification is what we are protesting. It is not.
Let's just suppose that during a period when a negotiated settlement was in effect, the Commission did exercise its Section 10 authority by rulemaking. Now, would you claim that though a settlement such as this one would be exempt until it expired?
If the
utility would be exempt until the settlement expired?
I don't know that we could, Your Honor, in those circumstances. And it would depend. It would depend on the intersection, I think, of the rulemaking and what was required of us versus what the settlement requires. And that rulemaking is, as I've mentioned, pending. What the Commission cannot do is, in the guise of exercising its Section 5 authority, modify this tariff without establishing the proof that it needs to establish under Section 5. So the Commission has all avenues available to it. I shouldn't say that it's constrained at all, because it can get information through audits, it can get it through rulemakings, it can get it through separate Section 10 orders, perhaps, although those limits have never been tested. It can even modify the tariff under Section 5, but it needs to meet those Section 5 standards. This Court has never said that the substantial evidence standard waxes or wanes.
Are you dropping your Sierra Mobile argument when you say it can modify it under Section 5?
No, I think the Mobile Sierra standard is the starting point for the inquiry. But even assuming that we can get past the public interest standard, which is almost insurmountable, and into Section 5, the Commission has a little bit of a frying pan fire situation, because once it's in Section 5, it needs to show both that that current term is unjust and that the term they want to replace it with is just. And it's not enough simply for them to say, we have policies and this is a good thing. This Court has never construed the Section 5 evidentiary burden to shift depending on what term is being modified. And I submit that would be a very dangerous precedent to set, to say, well, because this is not quite close enough to rates, we can require a lesser amount of evidence. This was in the tariff. It was a term of the tariff. And under Natural and under the Union Electric case, it doesn't matter whether we're talking about a rate, a term of service, or another term of the tariff. It is an integral part of the tariff.
Can we go back to something you said? I understood you to say that before the current settlement was signed off on, Keyspan had raised this issue of cross-subsidization through the fuel retention mechanism.
Yes, it had. It did in 2004, when after Dominion filed its first informational fuel report, Dominion raised an issue in a separate proceeding relating to whether there was cross-subsidization. And let me make a practical point on that, if I may. The reason that the Commission doesn't have evidence supporting its concern about subsidization is that, if I may finish this point, is that there is no problem with subsidization. The fuel retention percentages are fixed. Waivers occur on individual transactions when there's no fuel consumed and therefore no need to retain fuel to run the compressors. These settling parties, including Keyspan, are not going to feel a thing depending on some other shipper's negotiated rate because their percentage is fixed and was.
That was the purpose of my original question.
Yes.
And I think what you're saying is consistent with the notion, which may be outlandish, but still with the notion that the data before everybody, before the this contract was agreed upon, showed costs that weren't real or suppressed revenue that was real. Is that not true? I mean, I understand that Dominion can give away the whole house now, and that won't justify, that won't take any money out of Keyspan's pocket.
Right, but just we're not talking about the data in 01 or 05. We're talking only about data going forward. In fact, the Commission, in its rehearing order, made the point that data from 04 and 05 is of limited utility because what everybody is talking about, what everybody is looking at, isn't what was on the table back in 01 or 05 when people were painstakingly putting together this settlement. It's the possibility that sometime in the future, this data might be useful to them. Keyspan was a settling party in this agreement, not just once, but twice. One time after this issue was raised. If it wanted that data, if it wanted the information, it should have sought it as part of the settlement process, not afterward in an end run around Mobile Sierra and the tariff standards.
Under that argument, then, it couldn't get the information in the rulemaking either?
Oh, no. The Commission's separate rulemaking authority is completely retained to the Commission. But Keyspan initiated this inquiry.
But you're saying that the Commission could get this in the rulemaking, but you're arguing that we're only concerned about forward-looking information.
Oh, is your question with respect to the backward-looking data from 05, 04?
The 06 information.
The 06 information was filed, Judge Rogers.
No, what I mean is the rulemaking is going on. All right, we're now in 2008.
Yes.
Is your argument that since anything out of the rulemaking is going to be prospective only, again, the Commission could not order your client to turn over this information under Section 10?
No, I don't think that's our argument. I mean, to begin with, both the 06 and 07.
So you're saying they could, during this rulemaking that's pending, ask for this 06 information?
The Commission could and did ask for this 06 information, and we filed it. We filed 06 and 07. What the Commission declined to do because it recognized that this was a Section 5 action and it couldn't act retrospectively, it declined, finding that the information would be of limited utility at this point, to ask Dominion to go back and refile those fuel reports from 04 and 05.
Thank you.
There are no further questions.
I've got,
yes, Judge.
One on standing, and you just said you have filed this information in another context, and you don't argue that it would be a burden to produce the information. Is your injury limited to the sanctity of the settlement agreement, or is it greater than that you think if they could do this, then tomorrow we'll get another?
It's all of those things, Your Honor, but it's not just the psychic injury from the violation of the settlement agreement. It is a burden on us to be asked to submit, to gather and submit more information than we contracted to. The burden doesn't need to be great. Oh, I believe we did. At page 23 of our
undue burden argument.
Right.
We didn't make an undue burden argument because we didn't have to make a standing argument. It was enough to show that we were injured. We're injured because we contracted in this settlement to provide 16 informational items. We were ordered to provide 19. That is our injury.
Right. And let me ask you about the language on its own volition. If this hadn't been requested at Keyspan's prodding, how would that change your position? I guess it wouldn't. You just wouldn't make that argument. If
the commission on its own, what the own volition language, as we understand it, and as the commission understands it, interestingly, in its rehearing order, we think means on the commission's own motion. When you look at Section 5 of the Act, there are two ways that the commission can institute a Section 5 proceeding. One is on its own motion. That's the language. And the other is on the complaint of another entity. The commission characterizes that particular phrase, Section 4.6 of the settlement agreement, as permitting the commission to institute a Section 5 proceeding on its own motion. So, Judge Henderson, if Keyspan hadn't come in and said, we would like these three pieces of information, please order them to produce it, and the commission had initiated a Section 5 action on its own motion, we wouldn't have that Mobile Sierra argument. We wouldn't have the argument that the settlement was unduly tinkered with. We'd still be in Section 5 land, and commission still would have to carry both of those prongs of it by substantial evidence. Okay. Thank you.
Could you start out at the question that I originally was asking Stetson about the relationship between this information and the risk of cross-subsidization?
Yes, Your Honor, and good morning. May it please the Court. Sorry. Holly Kafer for the Commission. What this information that the Commission has required allows the Commission to do is to compare fuel use with fuel retention. The Commission would not have ordered this information if it had everything that it needed to understand the full scope of fuel use and fuel retention on Dominion's system.
What rates is it exercised about? I mean, isn't it the case that, as I say, Dominion could give away the store to all its other customers, and that wouldn't have any impact at all on Keyspan? It would just bankrupt Dominion.
I'm not sure that that's true, because what the Commission found here is that there is a potential subsidy because the shippers like Keyspan, who are subject to the fixed fuel percentage in the settlement, always have to provide that same amount of fuel to Dominion. Dominion, as you recognized, can waive or lower the fuel retention requirements for other shippers, the negotiated rate shippers. So if, in fact, Dominion...
That's not going to entitle it to get one penny more from Keyspan.
Well, I think what it raises is the concern that the settled fuel retention percentage could potentially be too high. In other words, if Dominion is waiving the fuel retention requirements and perhaps shouldn't be because there is fuel being used or fuel being lost in those transactions.
I mean, wouldn't that have to do with the data going into the negotiation of this contract? In other words, I suppose indirectly, because presumably there's a certain continuity in all these things, but to upset the rates agreed upon in a settlement on the basis of data relating to fuel use 3 years later seems odd.
If I understand, Your Honor, what you're getting at. I don't think that the parties negotiating the settlement here anticipated this issue or thought of this issue.
Well, Stetson said that, in fact, it had been raised.
The issue of fuel retention had been waived. However, as you can see, the 16 items that are currently required by the tariff, which was established by the settlement, don't address the issue of fuel waivers at all. And so that's why the commission then needed this information.
Perhaps I misunderstood, Ms. Tessa. I thought it should be saying that the issue of cross-subsidization was also on the table in 04.
I'm not certain it was, and I don't believe that there's anything in the record on that direct point. Certainly, the issue of fuel retention was discussed as a matter of the settlement, and the fuel retention percentage was settled and it was fixed. And as part of that, the parties agreed that Dominion would provide a fuel report each year until it files another rate case. And then what the commission did here was to find that those existing 16 pieces of information are simply not enough in light of the what it found is the potential for a subsidy. The potential for the subsidy arises out of the nature of the fixed fuel retention mechanism.
This is backward-looking, right? In other words, the subsidy has got to be on the theory that effectively going into this contract, Dominion was showing figures which overstated its cost, understated its revenue, and somehow, I don't know, deceived Keyspan. Is that right? And so we'll be looking at figures for 06 to show how things really were or should have been in 03 or 04. Is that right?
I don't believe that the information is intended to be that backwards looking. What the commission wants to see with this information is on an annual basis how much fuel Dominion is waiving, and it can compare that and use it in calculating what it thinks is a proper or just and reasonable fuel retention rate for the settled shipper set for the shippers under the settlement. If that answers your question,
that would be effectively using the 06 data to rewrite the 04 contract. Is that right?
Well, it wouldn't be. You're right, Your Honor, that the commission would need to act under Section 5 in order to change the settled fuel retention requirements. And part of what the commission does in any rate case, whether in this case or in another case under the Natural Gas Act, is it looks at both past data and forward-looking data in order to determine whether the any given rate, whether it's fuel retention or something else, is just and reasonable. And so what this requirement then allows the commission to do is look at the actual data from the past year to put that into its calculation of what a just and reasonable fuel retention requirement or rate, if you will, would be.
What about counsel's argument that Section 10, as it's been interpreted by the agency all these years, has never been used in this manner?
Your Honor, I don't know that Section 10 has never been used in this manner.
No one cited anything.
Right. The Commission did rely on Section 10 in this case, and it certainly has with some frequency and is currently relying on Section 10 in a related rulemaking where it seeks additional information, or actually where it is inquiring into fuel retention mechanisms more broadly. However, I don't think that there's anything in Section 10 that would preclude the Commission from using Section 10 in this type of case, a fact-specific case like this, which is why it did.
What about the fact that in this current rulemaking, I gather that the Commission has asked for this information and received it from Dominion?
I'm not sure that that's accurate, Your Honor. In the current rulemaking, there are two current industry-wide proceedings that are going on. The first is a notice of inquiry where the Commission is inquiring into the current industry practices for fuel retention. The second is a notice of proposed rulemaking where the Commission has broadly on a number of matters, including fuel retention, is updating its reporting requirements under Section 10. And in that notice of proposed rulemaking, it is not, to my understanding, seeking the same information that it is seeking from Dominion here, which I think relates to the reason why the Commission is seeking the information here, and that is that there is a potential subsidy. That potential subsidy is based upon the particular nature of Dominion's settled fixed fuel percentage fuel retention requirement. Because the recourse shipper's fuel retention requirement never changes, yet Dominion can change the fuel retention requirement for other shippers, there is a potential for subsidy here. And like I said, the Commission hasn't addressed that in the rulemaking. Mm-hmm. I believe there was also a question regarding the standard for acting under Section 10, and it is a very broad standard, as was identified by Dominion. It's whatever that is appropriate or necessary to allow the Commission to conduct its duties under the Natural Gas Act. In this case, the Commission has important duties of monitoring and overseeing the Dominion's rates in order to determine whether Section 5 action is necessary. Of course, it would have that responsibility regardless of the settlement, but the settlement gives it that responsibility in this particular case. And here, I think, you know, a number of times the Commission in the rehearing order mentioned that there's a particular concern because Dominion cannot file a new Section 4 rate case until 2010, and even after that it has no obligation to. So from the Commission's perspective, that heightens the need for this information.
I'm sorry, it has no obligation because, I mean, the contract would expire in 2010, right?
Right.
And so then, assuming no renegotiation, what would follow?
I believe that its rates would remain the same as they are set forth in the tariff. However, Dominion has no obligation to come in and update its rates through a general Section 4 rate case.
So in other words, the contract and a Section 4 filing are, in this particular case, the same, producing the same tariff? I mean, I understand to have Section 4 filings go on and on until somebody changes something, but that's not true of the contract. So what you're saying seems to presuppose that they're identical twins at this point.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I didn't mean to suggest that the tariff and the settlement are one and the same. I think what happened here is that the 2001 and the 2005 settlement and also prior settlements established certain of the rates and terms of service that are in Dominion's tariff. And those settlements also preclude, the 2005 settlement does, precludes Dominion from coming in to change those settled rates and terms of service until 2010. Anytime after 2010, Dominion can come in and file a broad-based Section 4 rate case, which would allow it to change anything in its tariff, is my understanding of the settlement agreement moratorium. In this case, the Commission looked at that moratorium and said, one, the settled fuel retention percentage will not change until 2010 unless we change it, because Dominion and the parties are not allowed to. And two, even after 2010, Dominion does not need to or does not have the obligation to come in under Section 4 to change its rates, which is significant because there's always the possibility that, just generally speaking, setting aside fuel retention, Dominion's costs could change, or in particular, they could decrease, and so Dominion does not need to come in to change its rates in order to do that, setting aside whatever. It does not need to do that. So,
if in this rulemaking the Commission isn't contemplating imposing such a requirement generally, is that because it thinks that Dominion is unique in its potential for manipulating the fuel retention?
Well, I think it's important to recognize that the Commission has been reviewing Dominion's fuel reports, and it has not yet taken any Section 5 action. But again, here I think what the Commission found, perhaps it's unique, I'm not sure, but in any event, in this case, there is a potential for a subsidy here. I don't know if there's a potential for a subsidy on other pipelines. The reason that there is a potential for a subsidy here, and this is in paragraph 22 at JA 336 and 337, is because of the nature of the fixed fuel retention percentage in the settlement. That is that because that rate doesn't change, yet Dominion can lower or waive the retention requirement for other shippers, there's a potential for the recourse shippers under the settlement to be subsidizing the negotiated rate shippers. The Commission has a policy against that, and that type of subsidy would be unlawful, and here the Commission found that there's the potential for it. So that's the underlying reason for this information request.
I mean, on this theory of cross-subsidization, isn't the potential for cross-subsidization present whenever you have a rate locked in by contract and discount and the pipeline being entitled to give discounts for other shippers?
Yes, Your Honor. There is frequently the potential for cross-subsidization.
So what's special about this?
Well, I think that in any place where the Commission identifies the potential for cross-subsidization, I'm not sure that it is special. But what is special here is that the Commission identified the potential for cross-subsidization.
What I'm suggesting is that on your argument, that potential is ubiquitous.
I don't know that it's ubiquitous, Your Honor. However, I would say that where the Commission identifies that potential, it has an obligation to ensure that, in fact, there is no subsidy occurring. And what it found was, in this case, with these three items of information, it can, in fact, ensure that that subsidy is not occurring.
On the application of Section 5, assuming we were in Section 5 land, is there any case where the Commission changes rate under Section 5 simply because the scales fall from its eyes? It suddenly perceives something that was there before and just says, we didn't see it then, now we see it. Which seems to me a fair characterization of what's happening here.
Yes, Your Honor. I can't say that I'm aware of a case where the Commission said that. But I think that the point is that it can, in fact, later identify a problem and seek to correct it as it did here under Section 5 and under Section 10, as the order states. I think the Commission has an obligation to constantly be working to ensure that rates are just and reasonable, and of course, with advancements in our understanding and analysis of rates, this may happen from time to time, and here the Commission felt that it needed to act on it.
Did the Commission here ever say, the scales have fallen from our eyes, now we suddenly understand the reason why the old tariff is unreasonable is because now we suddenly understand something we didn't understand?
I don't think the Commission admitted that it didn't understand at the time that the settlement was filed that there was this need. I'm not sure that the Commission's orders reflect on that point at all, but
doesn't that make the necessary finding that the old rates are unjust or unreasonable vulnerable?
The Commission found that is enough. In other words, when new information comes to the Commission, that information, I think, regardless of the context, can be used to support a finding that a tariff is unjust and unreasonable, as it did here. And here, the Commission looked at the existing fuel report. It understood the concerns of Keyspan, and it went one step further than Keyspan and found that there is a potential for a subsidy here, so that it was able to find that it found that it could not allow the tariff to stand as is because that wouldn't allow it to see whether there's a subsidy.
Okay.
Anything else? Thank you.
Mr. Maloney?
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Kenneth Maloney. I'm here today on behalf of the Keyspan Delivery Companies. The Keyspan Delivery Companies are natural gas distributors and among Dominion's largest customers. In the jurisdictions in which they operate, they have legal and or regulatory obligations to purchase pipeline capacity at the lowest possible cost. Let me try to respond to your question, Judge Williams, to the panel, which is, it's our position that contrary to Dominion's claims, the Commission did not err when it determined that requiring Dominion to modify its fuel reports upset the 2001 TECRA or 2005 settlements. When the Commission imposed the incremental fuel reporting requirements, it was addressing matters that were outside the scope of the matters that were addressed in those settlements. Namely,
it's like the difference between a rate of $5 is outside the scope of a rate of $4.
Well, let me Let me try to go through the chronology a little bit, and maybe we can see how this dispute arose, which is, in 2001, there was the TECRA settlement that established a set of fuel rates, but it didn't address what happens if there are negotiated rates. In 2002, the commission issued a negotiated rate order in which it told Dominion that if you negotiate rates, you have to credit for fuel. You have to credit your fuel account with the maximum retainage, regardless of the level that you negotiate and agree with a customer. Subsequent to that time, in 2004, Dominion filed certain tariff amendments that reflected negotiated fuel amounts. However, Dominion contended that they weren't negotiated fuel amounts. They were, in fact, the incremental fuel amounts that should have been attributable to those services. Keyspan and other parties disagreed with that, objected to it, and the commission found that Keyspan was correct, that those should have been treated as negotiated fuel amounts, and Dominion should have been required to credit the amounts arising under those contracts to its fuel, okay, to its maximum
this
retainage.
This finding is when?
This was in 2004.
Okay.
Now, at the same time, those...
That does mean that this, essentially the cross-subsidization issue was very much on the table.
It was raised in this context. And then at the same time, this created an impression in Keyspan's mind that Dominion's fuel reporting under the settlement may not have been as consistent with the commission's policies as it was supposed to be. And hence, they asked for the modifications to the fuel reports. Now, while that dispute was pending, Dominion drafted and filed the 2005 settlement. Now, in that settlement, it never addressed the dispute that was pending before the commission at that time.
I'm sorry, but Keyspan bought that, right?
Keyspan agreed with the settlement because the settlement, as we said, didn't address, it never purported to address the issue that was pending before the commission. If you look at Joint Appendix 154 and 155, it says that the settlement was addressing issues raised in a complaint that might have been filed by the New York Public Service Commission concerning the overall level of rates and fuel charges by Dominion. It didn't address the specific issue of fuel reporting that Keyspan had raised in 2004. Finally, in December,
where on 154, 155 is something affirmatively excluded?
It doesn't affirmatively exclude it. Now I'm not for my tab here. It doesn't affirmatively exclude it. It just says that if you look at section 1.4 at the bottom, mm-hmm. It says in the fall of 2004, the PSC on Rye notified DTI of its intention to file a complaint, et cetera, et cetera. And the negotiation over that resulted in this agreement. There's no recital in here that this addresses the issues that Keyspan raised in 2004.
And Keyspan didn't think it's suitable to reserve it in the settlement?
As I said, it was pending in another proceeding at that time. As this settlement didn't purport to address it, there was no reason to.
Okay.
Having said that, it's our position that the commission acted properly when it determined that the settlements were not being modified. It was merely modifying a fuel report. Dominion's obligations under the settlement to file the 16 items continue as they did before. The commission simply augmented it to address issues that arose in a different proceeding. Thank you very much. That concludes my argument.
And I do want to pin you down again on standing, because I've looked at your reply brief again. I see that you say a new, different, and more extensive annual report, but you may make a very persuasive argument today that the commission isn't hamstrung, there are 9,000 ways they can get this, we've actually given it to them in the rulemaking and so forth. So I'm just trying to pin down your injury is really that they cannot get this information through this route.
Well, our injury is present right now because the commission required us to file this information pursuant to this route. If the commission, sometime in the future, pursuant to a lawful the grant of authority, were to require us to submit the same information, we might not be able to challenge it then, or maybe our challenge would take a different form. But our injury right now is that the commission required us to file additional information. It's as if we settled for $100 and the commission said, no, pay $103.
But they required you to do it through this route.
Through this route is what is unlawful, and our injury is the additional information. Let me make just a couple points with respect to the chronology issues. The first is, Judge Williams, no one in this case, and I think I heard FERC counsel say the same, is contending that this information is designed to be backward-looking, nor could it. If you look at Joint Appendix 85, which is the 2001 settlement, DTI alone shall bear the risks of any under-collection of system gas requirements, and DTI alone shall retain the benefits of any over-collection of system gas requirements. No one is contending, not FERC and not Keyspan, that something was amiss in 2001. Now, up to 2004, I would direct you to Joint Appendix.
How can we be confident of that? Because, I mean, it seems to me, for the Commission's position to make any sense, it's got to be that there's something about the data going into this settlement that that caused the rate for Keyspan to be too high and the rates for the others to be too low.
I think your presumption that the commission's for the commission's opinion to make any sense is the important presumption. The commission has never argued that something was amiss in 2001. Nor could it approved the settlement in 2001 as fair and reasonable. To Keyspan's point about the chronology, Keyspan in Joint Appendix 227, which is the objection to the July 2005 informational fuel report.
Sorry, 227?
JA 227, observed that last year, i.e. 2004, it raised these issues in the proceeding that Mr. Maloney mentioned and was told that wasn't the place to raise them. The place to raise them was in early 2005 when the parties negotiated their settlement. Keyspan was not precluded during the course of those negotiations from suggesting that those 16 items be expanded to include an additional 3 items that it had put the commission on notice that it was concerned about the year before. And there's absolutely no support for the notion that they didn't have the capability of doing that in 2005. Keyspan accepted that bargain, and the commission approved it. Judge Williams, your question about the potential for subsidy is exactly right. If the FERC counsel's argument is taken as it was submitted, it means that any time a settlement is approved that has negotiated rates, there's a potential for a subsidy. That can't be the case, and there's no limiting principle that was offered in this case. One last point to Judge Rogers, your question relating to the rulemaking and the submission of information, I want to clarify one small point. We submitted the information that we were, the additional information we were ordered to submit, not as part of the rulemaking, but under the Commission's orders in this case, which we obeyed. If there are no further questions, thank you.